Good morning. Today is Friday, December 11th, 2020, and the time is now 9:39. I now call the meeting of the Finance Commission to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. At this time, Commissioner Cooper, will you conduct a roll call?
Yes, I will. Chairman Holt is here. Dr. Armstrong? Dr. Armstrong, are you present? Okay, I'll move forward to Bob Orkoff.
I'm here.
That's
Orkoff here.
Okay, Dr. Armstrong's here. Mr. Orkoff. Hector, are you on?
Yes, I'm on.
And Molly Carroll, you're on?
Yep.
Larry Long?
Larry Long here.
Mr. Lucas?
Will Lucas here.
Thank you. Mr. McCauley?
I'm here.
Thank you. Sharon McCormick?
Here.
Thank you. Laura Nasseri Warren?
Good morning. Here.
Thank you. And Vince Puente?
Vince Puente is present and accounted for.
Thank you, Vince. Okay, Mr. Chairman, there's a quorum with all 11 members present.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooper. And I'd like to thank Mr. McCauley especially for filling in for me in the chair's role last time. I appreciate it. I know the meeting went very well. So, Cliff, thank you for serving in that capacity. Members, we will now move on to the Finance.
My pleasure.
Thank you, sir. We will now move on to the Finance Commission matters. If there's anyone wishing to address the Commission during the time of public comment, you will need to use the webinar platform in order to be recognized. You must use the raise your hand feature on the screen and submit the agenda items you wish to comment on using the question feature. Public comments on the non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes and the agenda items to 10 minutes. Any comments relating to the rule may be made at the time of the rule decision. In accordance with the Finance Commission policy on testimony, public comments are not allowed on agenda items related to final rule adoptions except upon the majority vote of the Commission, in which the comments are limited to 10 minutes. Do we have any audience members wishing to provide a general comment? Is that no?
No.
Okay. Members, before we take up consent item agendas A1, B2, C2 through C4, and D2 and D3 in a single vote, I want to state that any commission members may request that an agenda items be moved from the consent agenda and be placed on the regular agenda so that it may be discussed and voted on individually. Members, as a reminder, please state your name and before making a motion or a second to the motion. Do I hear a motion to adopt the consent agenda items A1, B2, C2 through C4, and D2 through D3 without any discussion?
This is Vince Puente, I so move.
Thank you, sir.
Will Lucas, I'll second.
Thank you, sir. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
The ayes have it and the motion passes. Members, we will now be moving on to item number 4, the Finance Commission operations. Commissioner Cooper?
Okay, I'll make a general comment about what's going on. So we have last meeting we talked about the Finance Commission building continues to be closed to the public. We have established a headcount capacity. All three agencies have established a headcount capacity of no more than 50%. If you remember, we had moved that up from 25%, but I can assure the members that all the agencies are continuing their operations. I mentioned last time that we had scheduled some improvements to the ventilation system that were recommended by some consultants, included increased thickness on the various filters and some other items that should help improve the quality of the air and hopefully reduce any potential for spreading viruses. And as of Wednesday, all of that work has been completed. Now I'm going to turn to the legislative session to give the members just some any questions on what I just said about the building? Okay, I'm going to turn to the legislative session and give y'all some general information. The regular session starts on Tuesday, July the 12th.
January.
Excuse me, January, which is Tuesday. Then the last day that the legislators can file bills and joint resolutions other than local bills and emergency appropriations would be Friday, March the 12th. And the last day of the regular season is Monday, May the 31st. And committee assignments, which are all very important, are typically done and completed between May of January and early February. And this time, with all the possible video sessions and everything else, everything is a little bit up in the air about how committee meetings will be held. Just for some comparison, bills and resolutions that were filed on the first pre-filing day, there were 545 of those. In comparison, last session, there were 457. So about 100 more this time. Bills and resolutions that have been filed through December the 9th, we've had 1,029 bills. And just some historical information, bills that were filed last session total 7,324. Bills passed, there were only 20% of those bills were passed, which was 1,429. And out of those bills, 56 of those were vetoed by the governor. So that's all the information that I have on the legislative session. Obviously, things are picking up rapidly. And one other thing I'd like to mention, the second annual Finance Commission training manual was sent out to y'all in October, and I'm happy to say that we've had acknowledgement from all of the members. So thank y'all for doing that. And Mr. Chairman, that's all I have for general operations.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooper. We're going to move on to item number 5, the Audit Committee report. Chairman Curl, can you please give us the report?
Great. The Audit Committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the agency's fiscal year 2021 internal auditor's risk assessment and audit plan.
Coming upon the recommendation from the Audit Committee, no second is needed. Is there any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it. We're now going to move
on.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Molly.
I was just going to say, Chairman, that's the only report.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Members, we're now going to move on to item 6A, Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For reference, we're going to turn to page 17, but as a little bit of preface to this item relates to a status report on implementation of sunset recommendations, and the Sunset Commission required the agencies to respond regarding their implementation status of legislative action from the prior sunset recommendations. So these are all legislative recommendations. You'll see it references the bill and the actual where in the bill it is. And so the OCCC chart begins on page 17, and these items are specific or unique to the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. So it's kind of lengthy. There's a lot of detail here, but the chart contains 17 legislative actions that items that were contained within our sunset bill. These were adopted by the legislature and based upon the recommendations by the Sunset Commission. And so you'll find in the far right-hand column the implementation status and comments that we provided to the Sunset Commission regarding how we had implemented that particular provision. It also includes documentation links So of these 17 items, the first one was just continuation of the agency, so no action was really necessary for that one. All the other 16 required a response, and you'll see that the status of all of those has been completed with, again, some comments and some documentation. So that's really all I was intending to present. I'd be happy to go into any individual detail if you would like more detail, but other than that, that's all I was prepared to comment on, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Well done, Commissioner Pettyjohn. We're going to now move on to item 6B. Commissioner Cooper.
Okay, the banking department starts on 25, and the way the report that we had to complete was done, it has Finance Commission actions, Department of Banking actions, and also Savings and Mortgage Lending actions. So I'm going to ask Wendy Rodriguez to go over the Finance Commission piece and the banking piece, and then we'll turn to Savings and Mortgage Lending.
Wendy Rodriguez for the Texas Department of Banking. On page 25, as Commissioner Cooper stated, you will find the chart that was submitted to Sunset, which addresses the individual items for the implementation chart. All three are included in this chart as part, since we were all referenced in Senate Bill 614, and that bill addressed the two agencies and the oversight board. There are 13 statutory items in the chart. Four pertain to the Finance Commission and six pertain to the Department of Banking. All of these items were implemented and denoted as completed in a response to the Sunset Advisory Commission. Each one of those are documented with links and a detail of how the items were implemented. We have not received any further questions from the Sunset Commission. I'm happy to answer any questions that members may have.
Thank you, Wendy. Anything else?
No, not for the Department of Banking.
Commissioner Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The legislative recommendations pertaining specifically to SML are on page 31 and 32. There are five of them, and as you can see in the implementation chart, we submitted as those all being complete with links and documentation for review. From
Boston said,
and we have heard nothing further back at this point. And that concludes our portion.
Great, thank you. Well done, both banking department, SML. Thank you all for doing that. We'll now move on to item 6B, Commissioner Cooper, regarding the Finance Commission and the Sunset recommendations.
Okay, but on page 33 will be the letter that Chairman Holt sent back to the Sunset Commission, and let me give you a little bit of background. So we just went over the legislative changes. This is a management change, and if some of you may remember during the Sunset process, the Sunset staff was I'll just use the word critical, are very inquisitive about the cash reserves that the three agencies had. But we ended up saying that the Finance Commission had adopted a funds policy on February 18, and we basically said we needed to have some time for that to prove whether it was working or not. So they agreed with that. So this letter is regarding the recommendation which directs the Finance Commission to analyze and report the implementation of their fund balance report, which was adopted, as I said, in February of 18. So you can read the letter. If you look on page 34, we did adopt a policy. On the second paragraph on 34, it basically says what the policy says. The policy said that unreserved funds no less than 2 months, nor more than 6 months. And if these are projected to fall below 2 months or more than 6 months, that there had to be a plan created to correct that. So in the middle paragraph, just generally speaking, the Department of Banking and the Office of Consumer Credit commissioner are operating within the policy, and then there is some information about the status of the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending, and you can read that. But I think at this point, Commissioner Jones, would you like to make any comments regarding that?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Cooper. I just wanted to summarize what we put in the letter for y'all. As we reported to the Finance Commission in October, we finished fiscal year 20 with reserves of 6.9 months. For fiscal year 20, we saw revenue continue to increase due to the growth of both the thrift and the mortgage industry, and our expenditures decreased from what we had budgeted due to COVID. So one action we have already taken, which we did as soon as we saw that that would be an issue, was that during fiscal year 21, during the budget process, we reduced fees to the mortgage industry, we reduced assessments for thrift, and that was in order to lower revenue while also making sure that each industry is fully supporting itself. And we continue to explore and analyze all possible avenues and available mechanisms to return to compliance while being sensitive to Sunset's recommendation to maintain consistent and reliable fees in order to avoid obfuscation of the cost of regulation, and also being sensitive to other Finance Commission policies. So as we close our first quarter, and as we see the impact on revenue of mortgage renewals, those end December 31st, we'll be able to determine our fiscal position. And at the February meeting, when we present our financials, we will, our first quarter financials, we'll update you on our plan with regard to cash reserves and liquidity.
Thank you. Anything else, Commissioner Cooper?
So just kind of to finalize, as indicated in your letter, the Finance Commission will continue to monitor this. And so we'll be, the Audit Committee will be reviewing these, and then we'll have to review these at the Finance Commission in summary form.
Any questions, members? If not, we're going to be moving on to items 7 through 10. Commissioners, do you have any items needing to be discussed in open session for these items?
The OCCC does not.
Department of Banking does not.
Nor does Savings and Mortgage Lending.
Very good. Thank you all. We'll be moving on to the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. Commissioner Pettyjohn, would you please give us your report?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our report begins on page 39, but as usual, I kind of opened with a few comments on some recent economic data. Not a whole lot to report, because as you know, news events have been dominated by the election. But I've got a few recent releases I wanted to go ahead and share with you. One is that U.S. total household debt has declined for the first time. This is a Q2 data point, but declined for the first time since 2014. To a total of $14.27 trillion. On a Q data point just released, the U.S. household net rose 3.2% in the third quarter to a record as values of stock portfolios and real estate surged. So we're seeing some increase in the value, some decline in debt. Some of that debt decline relates to credit card balances, which I reported to you previously, and we've got some data from Experian showing some record drop in those credit card balances overall in 2020. There's been pretty consistent decade of growth in credit card debt. So it hit a high in 2019, right before the pandemic. And then after growing for, you know, 8 consecutive years. And then during 2020, we see credit card balances decrease by 9%. And overall, U.S. outstanding credit card debt is now around $756 billion, which is the lowest point since 2017. As I reported to you also in the last week, this reduction of consumer debt seems to be attributed in part to some of the relief from the CARES Act. Both the suspension of student loan payments and the one-time stimulus check. As we all know, Congress continues to work on additional relief, although I understand that's a difficult negotiation at the moment. There have been some fewer late and missed payments for credit card accounts in 2020, and percentage of delinquent accounts across all periods have declined. U.S. auto finance volume has rebounded overall in the third quarter for newly originated loans and leases, but not so much for borrowers with subprime credit, and that's according to some data from the New York Federal Reserve. The share of financing for new and used subprime financing, sorry, for new and used vehicles declined 170 basis points year over year, according to the State of the Automotive Finance Market report that was recently released. So we continue to see those are kind of consistent trends we saw, you know, from the last quarter, but we'll continue to keep you apprised of those as we look at some of those economic elements moving forward. It's an interesting year, as we all know. Many different levers in the economy moving in some unusual directions with response to the pandemic. So as we move into the report, it's on page 39, as I mentioned. We'll first start with our consumer protection or examination and consumer assistance. We've spent a lot of time, the team has spent a lot of time in this last period really working on refining our remote examination capabilities, and I think we're finding some really great success, and I applaud the team for their good work and really strengthening the procedures and the design of these type of exams. They are very unique, and there are certainly some limitations, especially with some of the types of licensees that we have to conduct them, but we are making good progress on those types of remote examinations. And overall, we're on track to meet our production targets that we set for fiscal 2021. So that's good news. Moving on to page 40, you'll see acceptable level of compliance. Again, this is a little difficult to look at because it's just 2 months of data, right? So you'll see the credit access business number is very low at 50%. This is because there's a very low number of examinations as the denominator in that category. So that's gonna bounce up significantly in Q2 is our expectation. And then property tax, we don't have any data to report for the first 2 months of fiscal year 2021. nothing yet unusual on those exceptional compliance levels trailing 12 months. Those all seem like the trailing 12 months total is in really good shape for all industries, but we'll see some probably variability with that across the fiscal year as we move further. Investigations, you'll see year-over-year performance is down significantly. Our investigations, those are field investigations, those are pretty critically impacted by COVID restrictions. It's just difficult to get out into some of the areas we need to go that we're not familiar, you know, we don't have potential relationships with some of these entities, and it's just a difficult time to go do some of these field examinations. We've been trying to move as much as we can in the investigation area to remote type responses, but some of this just requires actual field work. And so we'll expect that that's going to be a challenge for us kind of moving forward in 2021. Hopefully, you know, in the next few months, we'll have some more opportunity to be out in the field on these types of investigations. I did want to mention consumer assistance at the bottom of page 41, and I really want to recognize and congratulate our consumer assistance team for how much good work that they're doing in consumer complaints. You'll see our consumer complaints in FY21 are up 17% for these 2 months, comparable to year-over-year performance. The team has really done some great work to bring the performance level up in that department, and the remote situation for, you know, being able to conduct some of these complaints remotely has really been, they found some great efficiencies and are doing really, really well at through these complaints. So I want to recognize them for that performance. Moving on to page 44, wanted to mention something that's not in the book, and my apologies for not putting it in here, but on December the 1st, our agency completed its required availability, quality, and pricing of financial services report. And members should have received an email on this. The report is published on our website. I really want to recognize Carl Hubenthal for his great work on that report. It is very detailed. It's really well done. It contains in-depth research. It includes industry analysis and some great economic data. Carl's continued to expand the economic data presentation in that report. I think it's a really useful document for any that are interested. Carl also prepares this CAB reporting data, and some of that is reflected in the overall annual availability, quality, and pricing report. So I hope each of you have an opportunity to look at that at some point if you're interested. Moving on to the CAB reporting data, we see obviously we're beginning to see the impact of the pandemic and the economic weaknesses in some of the CAB reporting data. We see that total transaction volume has decreased by 32% in the first quarters of 2020 compared to the same three quarters in 2019. And there are obviously a number of factors for that beyond pandemic, the store closures, declining applications, some hardship concessions, and of course the CARES Act payments have all affected the volume. Repossession information on page 45, we talked about recently that we'd hit a high point in Q2 of 2020 for repossessions, and then we saw that that's dropped 60% from its previous quarter now to the lowest single quarterly total. They rebounded a little bit in Q3, but it's still below what we've seen historically.
Do you have any idea as to why that is?
Well, some of those I think I can't answer with certainty, of course. We have some speculation, but we thought there'd been some pent-up delinquencies that which they exercised in Q1 of 2020, and then there's a lot of concessions, hardship concessions and things that it really dropped off in Q2 with the beginning of the pandemic, and there was not a significant amount of repossession activity as lenders or credit access businesses attempted to work with their borrowers, as we encouraged them to do, to try to work with their borrowers, and they held off on, and then it potentially CARES Act payments could have helped people, you know, bring some of those accounts more current so that they weren't in default.
Thank you.
You're welcome. on page 46 is our licensing report. And not a whole lot to report here, but we've been in the renewal cycle. As you may recall, we pushed this out from several months from its prior cycle, so we've just completed sort of the newly aligned cycle. And we saw a good response with 87% of the motor vehicle sales finance licensees renewing their license. I think that's a little bit higher than what we expected, so that means that's really good, strong response to, I think, the business volumes that folks are hopeful and continuing on with good activity. We have opened now the renewal period for the credit access businesses, the regulated lenders, and the property tax lenders. And we typically are able to offer a discount to the regulated lenders, and lenders received a discount of 35% on their annual assessment. That is a slightly larger discount than what our initial budget projections were. We felt like we're seeing greater retention than what our initial projections had been. We're seeing growth, continued growth in the industry, as well as we're able to see some cost savings on our side. Expenditures are down, so we were able to enhance that discount a little bit more for the industry. And again, it'll help. We believe that'll help with our fund balance overall. So we felt like that was the right decision to continue to try to leave more of that money with the industry and enhance that discount. If you look at applications, I mentioned that we're continuing to see growth. We see our volume remaining near 140 new applications a month of, you know, over all types of activity, which is really pretty steady to what it's been in prior years. So we've not seen any weakness in that particular incoming new applications. Moving on to page 47, is our dashboard of all of our different licensing counts, and I just wanted to mention two numbers. And one is in the upper left chart. You'll see the number to the motor vehicle sales finance, and you'll see that number is fairly high. It's at its highest point on the graph. And again, we've just completed the renewal, so there's a number of those that will not have renewed. But in the next quarter, when we publish the data in Q2, you'll see a decline
as we'll see some non-renewals fall off of that particular data point. And then overall in the bottom right, you'll just see all regulated entities at about 30,577. Again, it's going to be a little bit impacted by the motor vehicle non-renewals, but we'll see. That's going to fluctuate a little bit as we're going now through the next renewal cycle. So we'll see that probably drop off over Q2 relative to both of these renewal cycles, but then usually it rebounds across the year. On page, there's information on communication and human resources on page 48-49. I probably don't need to stop on those at the moment. We're not really at a quarter end. I did want to mention on page 50 related to financial education. And we've been talking about, I think I've mentioned to you in previous meetings that our agency has really been working hard. Our financial education specialist has been working hard hosting several webinars on just broadly to the public on a number of financial education topics. And we're seeing some really good response to those. We had about 115 individuals take advantage of those webinars in October and November. Also, we were able to partner up with the Department of Banking in November to jointly host or provide a webinar called Applying for Credit. We had 62 individuals that attended that. That was very successful. And again, it was somewhat in response to Sunset, as they were hoping we would have more collaboration on financial education events. So we were very grateful to partner up on that event. We look forward to future collaboration opportunities. And cybersecurity information is there. I think I've already mentioned some of that in the audit. And otherwise, in terms of accounting, there's not a whole lot to discuss here. We're dealing with some year-end calendar procedures. Also, there's some significant amount of time that all the agencies are spending as we work on our preparations to transition to the new a statewide CAPS system for financial reporting. And so there's quite a bit of effort that goes into that planning process. We have been in some of the design elements way up through December. We'll be starting prototyping on that particular process in January. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. If there aren't, I'm ready to turn it over to Michael to discuss the legal report.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Rigby.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Michael Rigby, General Counsel for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. The legal report begins on page 53 of your material. And on that page, you'll find the enforcement reports, the primary actions we've taken since the last meeting have been late filing of annual reports by the regulated lenders and pawn shops. You can see that we issued 44 of these. Some of these are injunctions and some are administrative penalties. And as a reminder, the way that we approach enforcement actions are upon the first violation, we issue an injunction. And if there is a subsequent violation, then we will impose an administrative penalty. So that's why there's a breakout between those two approaches to enforcement. On page 55, there is a summary of federal rulemaking. The first one is called the OCC True Lender Rule. This has to do with bank partnerships. And then there's another summary of the debt collection rule by the CFPB, and on the next page, the payday loan disclosure testing. Finally, we have issued and updated some advisory bulletins having to do with the pandemic, the COVID-19 emergency measures. In summary, we extended the guidance through the end of the year, December 31st. In addition, we work with the Joint Financial Regulatory Agency, us, the Department of Banking, Savings and Mortgage Lending, and the Credit Union Department, and revised an advisory bulletin regarding the COVID measures for those entities. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And
Michael, thank you for that. I just wanted to add something on page 56. You talked about the CFPB payday loan disclosure testing, and I happened to be reviewing some documents about that particular project that they're working on and hiring this contractor to conduct these consumer interviews. But when I talk about it, some of the background of that project, you know, that there were two previous studies of consumer disclosures related to these types of loans. And they talk about a study that was done in 2012, and then they talk about the Texas disclosure. They did a study of the disclosure that the Finance Commission adopted related to, in response to the legislation that when we implemented regulation of credit access businesses. And the CFPB did do a study related to that disclosure. And as you may recall, we recently readopted that disclosure with some modifications. But I thought it was pretty positive, and really some of the adoption of the initial disclosure was based upon a 2012 study that they mentioned. Anyways, I thought it was a positive reflection on the work that the Finance Commission did relative to that disclosure, that it was mentioned sort of in the background of that study. And I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you very much. Anything else from the legal report?
Mr. Chairman, I did want to mention the legislative activity on page 57 and 58.
Yes, please do.
There's just, you know, as you've heard from Commissioner Cooper earlier about our process for providing information to the Finance Commission, and we'll be providing reports once the session starts on a weekly basis by email. We tend to track items that are the items we have on this. We have a lot of different tracks with others. There's too much information. We want to try to tailor some information directly to you of items that we think are important. And our track here, this report, tends to focus on items that are really amending the finance code areas that we have jurisdiction over. So these are very specific. There's three bills listed here. Although the last one is not an area that we have jurisdiction over, it's in the education code, but it relates to financial education and personal financial literacy courses. We thought that was pretty important. But we'll continue to provide you with this. I know the other agencies have some other legislation that's going to relate more broadly to state agencies. And, of course, we track those as well. But in the interest of not duplicating those, we're not including those on this report to you. So, again, we're happy to answer any questions relative to those as well.
Commissioner Perry, John?
Yes.
Vince here. Just a small question. It's a very attractive and easy to read document. Is telecom something new? Because I don't recall seeing that format before.
No, it's not. It's a service that we, you know, procure the service the three agencies do on a common contract, and it's a tracking service that's a publicly. I mean, it's you know, you can contract with them to track legislation and what have you. So that's a service that we, the agencies, use.
Okay. I just don't recall the format before.
And, Mr. Chairman, I think we handled our rules under the consent agenda. So that would conclude our report from the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner Pettyjohn. We'll be moving on to the Texas Department of Banking now. Commissioner Cooper.
Department of Banking starts on 79. Before we start, I want to make a general comment for the Finance Commission members about the status of the industry in Texas, banking industry in Texas as we see it. As reported previously, we discontinued our normal bank examination process in March, choosing to focus on trying to support our institutions where we could while they were continuing to try to deal with the COVID issues and keep what I call keeping their doors open and protecting their customers and consumers, and also getting out the stimulus package that came from the Paycheck Protection Program. And I'm sure I've said it before, but our Texas banks, and I'm talking about all charters, our Texas banks did a fantastic job of getting that money out the door. I don't think that they could have done any better. Some work 24 hours a day. And I'd just like to, if I could, commend to Cliff and Hector and Will and Sharon. I know your banks just did a fantastic job, and y'all are to be congratulated. You know, it's possible that we could have another round of this coming up. So we had a pause. We resumed our activity in June, and since we've started that, we have completed 53 bank examinations, so quite a few. So as you can imagine, we were very interested on what these reports were going to show. So a review of those 53 banks basically, I will say, reflect only a modest increase in adverse classifications. So based on those 53 exam reports that we reviewed and predicated on the data that we get, you know, such as the September call report information that has delinquency ratios and things like that, I'm going to say that our banks are doing reasonably well from a safety and soundness standpoint. So that's obviously a good thing. You know, future exams and the data that we get from the various sources, including the fourth quarter call report, will certainly be telling. A possible future stimulus package could provide benefit to Texas economy. So we'll just kind of have to see how that is. And also, as y'all know, we gave the banks the ability to, on their own, to modify their banking hours, reduce branch operations, as long as they continued to serve the needs of their customers. So we've been tracking all of that. You know, in many cases, branches were closed and had restricted hours. Possibly since then, they've reopened. But what we've seen is kind of a resurgence of reduction in bank hours recently. And it depends on how the banks feel like their local area is doing. But based on what we have seen, and I think I reported previously, we still only received one consumer complaint about lack of service, and that was on a very large national bank. So what we've seen, our banks are using this flexibility in a very responsible fashion. So I think that's, hopefully you feel that report is beneficial to you. Beginning on 79, this information is the same information that you received in your package last time. It hasn't been updated because of the time. On 80, page 80, the number of problem banks, again, same information, it's very low. Even though I think our banks are doing very well, I do think that our number of problem banks is going to increase. On page 81, talks about this. It's the same material as you received previously. Down at the bottom, talks about our compliance with examination priorities. We are in compliance. The only area that we're short of is on our foreign banks, and we only have 8 of those. But these are done in conjunction with the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve has chosen to put their priorities elsewhere, and I don't disagree with that. So we're going to run a little bit behind on that as we focus our attention on maybe our more local banks. On page 82, I will mention, as we've said before, all of our examinations are done off-site. And this has presented some problems, but with the help of bank management and modification of our procedures, I think we've been able to accomplish what we need to do. I want to mention the right down in the middle, we're talking about the self-assessment tool. Ransomware for banks and, quite frankly, a lot of industries is has increased substantially. On the 13th of October, the department issued a self-assessment tool for mitigating the risk of ransomware. I mentioned this to y'all last meeting. This was done by the department in conjunction with CSBS, the Bankers Electronics Crimes Task Force, and we have several Texas banks on that, and the Secret Service. And this was rolled out again in October. It was received very well by the industry. We made sure, or tried to make sure, that the trade groups also provided that information so it would get to all charters, if you will, and not just our charters. But we've been getting a lot of good comments, and a lot of good comments, quite frankly, from the federal agencies. So a good tool. You'll probably be hearing more about that. In fact, we have adopted that tool to be utilized by the non-depository industry, such as money service businesses, and that's going to be rolled out next week. Just a comment, I did attend the first FDIC Advisory Committee of State Regulators, which is composed of 14 state regulators. We had a virtual meeting in October, which the first meeting it's the first meeting like this, and I think the fact that the FDIC saw fit to bring in state regulators and get input from us is going to serve us well. Beginning on 84 would be the applications process. Again, this is the same material as last time. On 85, on the merger activities, we had one of our banks merge with two of its sister banks. So they had three banks that combined it into one. And beginning on 86, talks about the non-depository. This is a recap of the activity in for fiscal year 2020. A couple of things that I'm mentioned on 87. Our MSBs, money service businesses, operate regionally, if not nationwide. And I'll use an example like Western Union. And the Department of Banking has been pushing for years, and we've finally got it. I guess everybody's beginning to follow suit. We do multi-state examinations where maybe seven states will join together to do one exam, and we share the workload. And then hopefully the intent is hopefully for other states to accept that examination. And so we won't have each state going into each entity. And we call that one company, one exam. And so we've really highlighted that. It's getting a lot of traction. We are working through CSBS at a very, putting a lot of focus on this, because under the regime of the current acting comptroller of the currency, they are pushing for, if you will, a national charter for payment processors, which we believe puts the consumer at risk and possibly preempt state law. And so we're trying to do our best to reduce the pain points that state supervision sometimes causes by having various different regulations and statutes. And we're also working on what we call a model law that hopefully all the states will adopt. We are about 60% through with that. A lot of the things that we've been using on the model law are copied from what we've done in Texas. So we don't think we have a whole lot of things that we'll have to change. But this is a big push that all of the states are involved in. And hopefully you'll hear more about that. Then one Last thing on the non-depository I want to mention is the Conference of State Bank Supervisors does accreditation reviews of the departments. And we've had our department, banking department, has gone through the accreditation review. But they never have done the money service business side. So our department, just on the non-depository money service business side, just completed the second, been the only second examination that CSBS has done on the MSBs. And while the report has not been received, we were told that we got a very high score. So congratulations to that staff. They just really did a good job. On page 88, shows, as we have for quite a while, our outstanding postings. We only have three positions that we're posting for. The middle position, the law clerk for our legal department, I'm proud to say that that has been completed and the person has been hired. In fact, he's here today with us, so fortunate to have him. Then the next pages go over, for instance, on page 90, we're talking about turnover. You'll be seeing this chart right now. We've only had two people that have left. One was dismissed and one retired. Obviously, that chart will be updated. The complaints begin on 91. It's really kind of the same, nothing unusual, but it does give you the detail that you need. And the only other thing I'll mention, as Commissioner Pettijohn mentioned, we did hold the joint financial education webinar together. Both agencies worked on that, and I think we'll call it a success. And hopefully we'll be doing more of those in the future. So, Mr. Chairman, that's all I have on the general operations. And if we don't have any questions, I'll ask Catherine Ryer to go over our legal update.
Members, any questions for the commissioner? Hearing none, Ms. Ryer.
Good morning, members. Catherine Ryer, General Counsel, Texas Department of Banking. The legal report begins with a couple of items of litigation, and I think we're going to go into a little bit of a discussion of those when we go into executive session later on. Under pending contested cases, we have no administrative hearings set currently. We do have several investigations ongoing. Below that, you'll see the orders issued during the last period. Under the non-depository supervision, we've got five orders there. Each of those was an instance of an unauthorized money services business. A couple of those have chosen to either outsource their operations to a licensed entity or are applying for license, or I think one of them has chosen to cease business in Texas. And each of those consent orders included a monetary penalty. On page 2 of the legal division report, finishing up there with the enforcement actions, there was one enforcement action involving a consent order issued against a former officer of a bank had been involved in improper lending activities. The consent order included restrictions on her future abilities to perform lending activities on the part of our financial institutions. Normal activity, I would say, under public information requests. No gifts received during this period, and this is the below that you'll see the chart of the quarterly order activity. And that's, unless there are any questions, that's all I have.
Members, any questions? If not, we're going to move on to item number 5. Who's going to be speaking on?
That would be Ryan McCarthy, and he is right here.
Great. Good morning, Ms. McCarthy.
Ryan McCarthy, Assistant General Counsel, Department of Banking. The proposed amendments to Texas Administrative Code Title VII, Rule 30, Section 33.13, it starts on page 116 of your packet. These amendments clarify when the department is required to refund MSB application fees before the application has been accepted for filing with the department. Currently, under
I'm having a little trouble hearing.
I think everybody needs to be on mute while speaking.
Yeah. Okay, so currently, under subsection D of section 33.13, an application for MSB application has to include certain items. When those items are not included, the department can return the application and the fee or apply the fee if a subsequent application is received promptly. The amendments remove this ambiguous term of promptly and replace it with a 10-day deadline. So if the missing items are not received within 10 days, the department will refund the application fee to the applicant. When all of the items are received under subsection D, the department can begin processing the application. In a few cases, the department started processing the application and then the applicant withdraws the application before it's been accepted for filing. Currently, it's not clear under 33.13 whether or not the department must refund the fee in that case. These amendments would clarify that the department is required to refund the fee if the applicant withdraws the application, unless the department has gotten to the point where they have made a request for additional information and the applicant has responded. At that point, it's a bright line. The applicant and the department knows whether or not a refund is available, and the department has expended enough resources processing the application that warrants not refunding the fee at that point. And I'll open up for questions, and I would recommend that the commission vote to publish the rule for public comment.
Thank you, sir. Members, do we have any questions? If there's anyone wishing
to note, it was difficult hearing him, so whoever does the next report, I don't know what we need to do.
Yeah, we've got that corrected.
Other than being first.
Can you hear me now?
Is that better?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Does any member need anything reread to them regarding the rule? Hearing no reply, we're going to keep moving forward. If there's anyone wishing to address the commission for the Department of Banking rule item number 5, please use the raise your hand feature on your screen at this time. Seeing no one, we're going to move. Commissioner Cooper, was there anything?
We have to get a vote.
I'm sorry. Do I hear a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of amendments to 7TAC 33.13 concerning refund of MSB license application fees?
Laura Warren, so moved.
Thank you, Laura. Is there a second, please?
Orokov, second.
Thank you, Bob. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
The ayes have it and the motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a final thing on, as Commissioner Pettijohn mentioned, beginning on page 102 and going through 107, we have the bills that we're tracking. And we also include in here the bills that could impact the Finance Commission. So it's probably a little bit too early to go into any of these right now, but this is This is for your information, and if anybody has any questions, I'm sure they're certainly you can ask at these meetings, or if you can do an email if you'd like. So, but other than that, that's all we have.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooper.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
On page 106, in the middle of the page, there is, and I realize this is just a proposed bill, but do you have any personal or not personal, any thought line on what they're trying to accomplish? This is the one that says SB 86, amends the finance code.
At this point, I really don't have any comments. We are looking into it. In fact, I've received several emails about this. So, I think they want some information that's that we don't provide right now, or the banks don't provide right now, and so that'll be up to the legislature whether they want to agree with that bill or not. But we're looking into it.
Okay, thank you. I have one other question. On page 108, and maybe I missed the conversation on this, it's entitled the Pre-Need Corp.
Yes.
Why is that letter in our package?
Okay, that is on the consent calendar. Wallace Jones was reappointed to our advisory group, and that's just his background.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions for Department of Banking? Thank you, Commissioner Cooper. We'll be moving on to Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Commissioner Jones, would you please give us your report?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll begin on page 123 with the thrift industry. The status of the industry as of 9:30 was that all the savings banks were well rated. There are 24 savings banks. Total aggregate assets of $359 billion. Our supervisory analysts conduct quarterly reviews of their financials, the savings bank financials, and they continue to work with them on a myriad of items. With regard to the specific areas that we report to you all on, and which the charts and the materials cover, the industry remains well above regulatory capital requirements. Earnings, a profit margin, are at 3.55%. That indicates to us that the savings bank should have the resources to initiate their strategic plans. And their plans do vary widely. Some are looking towards acquiring other institutions. Some may be opening new branches or offering new products. But any of these plans that they have need those earnings to be good in order to be able to accomplish what their plans are and their goals are. Market risk remains satisfactory at this point. We are not detecting any asset quality issues, and non-performing loans are less than 1%. At the June meeting, I reported to you that liquidity risk was elevated. That risk has declined. And then I want to make a couple of COVID comments relating to COVID with regard to the thrift portfolio. At this point, the COVID exposure to the thrift portfolio has been limited, and we think that's due to the concentration in residential housing products. Savings banks normally don't engage in credit to some of the industries that are more vulnerable right now, such as the hospitality industry. And those that do have credits in those industries have some exposure have closely worked with their customers. So at this time, past dues are minimal, but we do continue to watch for any emerging trends. And also, our exams continue to be conducted off-site. Also wanted to mention the TBA's ATM Smash and Grab Task Force, which I'm a member of. The issue that is being seen is that loosely based organized criminals are stealing construction trucks and other heavy duty trucks to literally smash into ATMs and take whatever money they can get to, depending on the damage to the equipment. It takes them 2 to 3 minutes. Then they abandon the stolen truck and they disappear, never to be found again. They are now known to have used explosives, so the risk, safety risk, and damage risk is heightened. The national hotbed is Houston and Southeast Texas. However, those are not the only places that these fashion grabs are happening, either nationally or in Texas. We have seen some smash and grabs take place at savings banks that are in other parts of the state. The task force includes bank executives and security professionals from national banks, state savings banks, state commercial banks, federal and local law enforcement regulators, of which I am one, insurance providers, and ATM industry representatives. So there's a broad range of perspectives on this task force. We have met virtually in November and shared information from our various perspectives, compiled a list of recommendations, practical recommendations for the banks, and we'll continue to share information and work on how to impact this issue. So wanted to mention that. And then,
Commissioner Jones, can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Just average, what's an ATM usually have? How much cash is in an ATM?
I think it can vary, but if you don't mind, I'm going to ask Will Lucas in general, because I think he will know more specifically. I know that they...
We've actually had that question a lot. We try not to give that amount out and make that public.
I didn't think that...
You know what, Chairman Folt, let me do this. Let me, this is probably more appropriate anyway. Thank you, Mr. Lucas. Let me ask Stephanie Trotty if she knows.
I'll reach out to Stephanie offline.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I will say that the amounts that are stolen vary because it depends on what time of day, how much cash is in a particular machine. I'll answer it that way.
Thank you. Okay.
And then I will move on to mortgage on page 126. Licensing, the chart on page 126 reflects the industry status and population. The industry continues to grow. Currently, they are in renewal period, which is annual renewals from November 1st to 12/31. That is a time of lots of activity and lots of revenue coming in to the department. Exams continue being conducted off-site due to COVID. And then outreach-wise, we had our eighth mortgage industry seminar. That agenda's in the material, so you can see what kinds of topics we discussed with the industry when we have presentations to them. That was done virtually, of course. But we were pleased to be able to do that and had good response from the attendees. On page 128 is operations. Under risk management, for SML itself, as I stated, our examiners are all conducting their work off-site. Office staff is reported as no more than 50% any given day. But those that are not in the office on any particular day are fully equipped to work remotely and continue to do so. Our finance area, CAPS, continues to be a major focus. Audit was discussed elsewhere. With regard to human resources, in October and November, we brought on additional staff in legal, IT, and licensing. We have had one retirement, or had one retirement in first quarter. The chart on page 129 lists the current postings and status of those postings. And we had a virtual, we had a virtual agency-wide training in late November, which was a great way to get information in various on various subjects and trainings to the staff as a whole. And it also gave us a good opportunity, even though remotely, to be able to see each other and to be able to introduce our new staff to us and introduce us to them. So we were pleased with how that went. And with that, I am happy to take questions before I ask Ernest to give the legal report.
Any questions, members?
That Ernest Garcia will give legal.
Good morning, Mr. Garcia. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Holt. This is Ernest Garcia, General Counsel of the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Is my audio coming in okay?
Loud and clear. Thank you, sir.
Good morning, members of the Finance Commission. The legal activity report for the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending starts at page 130 of your materials, and I will be discussing also consumer complaints and gift reporting. Regarding consumer complaints in September and October of fiscal year 21, we've had 254 complaints, and this is a 9% increase compared with the same period last year. Servicing continues to make up the bulk of the complaints we receive, and I'm pleased to report that 96% of our open complaints are aged less than 90 days. With respect to enforcement orders, we have not issued any orders in relation to consumer complaints that we've received in September and October, but in September we issued 12 orders. On October we issued 7 orders. These are in relation to company examination audits. In September there were 2 residential mortgage loan originator or REMLO license denials that have been appealed. And in between September and October, as I mentioned, no orders in relation to complaint investigations. We did have 1 recovery fund application in October, and that was denied. Regarding contested State Office of Administrative Hearing cases or SOA cases, you may remember I've reported in the past about the Gonzalez and Abuchabi matters that are referenced here at the bottom of page 130. On the Gonzalez matter, the only thing that's happened, both of these were license denials, and they were both appealed to SOA, and in each case, the administrative law judge ruled in favor of the department with respect to the license denial. In the Gonzalez matter, the ALJ issued her proposal for decision on September 23rd, and on October 23rd, the commissioner issued her order adopting that proposal for decision, and absent an appeal to district court, that matter should be concluded and will no longer appear in further Finance Commission materials. The Chubby matter was also a license denial. There, the ALJ granted our motion for summary disposition. And the update here is that and this has happened after the materials were printed, is that the administrative law judge or ALJ issued his proposal for a decision on December 2nd, again in favor of the department's denial of the license application in that case. We currently have 1 contested SOA matter scheduled for a hearing on December 18th. Moving on to the litigation matters, the court litigation matters that are referenced on page 131 of the materials. Again, you may recall that I've mentioned the John Trend matter. This was unlicensed loan origination activity as well as unlicensed or unregistered loan servicing activity. And he filed bankruptcy, and then there's the lawsuit within the bankruptcy proceeding of the adversary. The update there is that on November 9th, the parties had a mediation that appears to have settled all matters in controversy. Now, the Texas Attorney General's office was certainly representing the interests of the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending, but there were a couple of other state agencies involved as well with respect to Mr. Trend's activities. And the proposed settlement is being reviewed by the Division and Executive Office of the Attorney General's office. But if it is approved, Mr. Trend, through his counsel, have agreed to consumer damages, civil penalties, and attorney's fees, some of which will be deemed non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. But the most important thing is some permanent injunctive terms, which would hopefully definitively prevent Mr. Trent from engaging in unlicensed origination activity or registered servicing activity in the El Paso area. So we believe that matter will be coming off of the Finance Commission materials as well. The John Douglas Black matter, the update there is that, again, that was a license denial, and he appealed it to district court, and we prevailed in summary judgment at district court level. The main update there, though, is that after the judge's ruling on September the 28th, he had until October 30th to appeal and did not do so. So that concludes the John Black matter. The bottom of page 131 is the Scott Marinelli matter. The Marinelli matter, the update, this was the attorney that was engaged in unlicensed loan modification activity, and we prevailed in front of SOA, and then we asked for the state to reduce it to a judgment. The update General's office on behalf of the department filed a motion for summary judgment. On December 7th, filed a motion for entry of the judgment, and we expect the district court here in Travis County to rule on that within the week. Moving to the top of page 132 is the Peter Wagner matter. Once again, that was an individual engaged in the license loan modification activities, and we had entered into a settlement. He breached the settlement, which was to provide restitution to consumers, and we asked for the Attorney General's office to reduce that to judgment. The update here is that the motion for summary judgment was filed on November the 23rd, and it's currently set for a hearing in Travis County District Court on January 14th of 2021. However, the defendant has filed a motion for continuance, and that's scheduled to be held on January 7th of 2021. During September and October, we received 18 public information requests. The page 132, we reference our future rule activity. We have not had any gifts since our last Finance Commission meeting on October 16th. On page 133 and page 134, we identify our legislative activity. The department is currently tracking about 80 bills, but on these two pages, we summarize five bills that are somewhat noteworthy. Two in particular that I'll mention, House Bill 216 and Senate Bill 43. You may remember that two sessions ago, there was a desire by numerous legislators for there to be some statutory guidance with respect to wraparound mortgages. And that started two sessions ago. The last session, the bill that received the most traction was that filed by Senator Zaffirini, and it got very close to the goal line, but didn't quite make it due to timing. And so during the pre-filing periods, Senator Zaffirini essentially filed the same bill again as Senate Bill 43. And then the companion bill was filed by Representative Ortega at El Paso, House Bill 216. And if those bills or one of those bills were to become law, it would create a new chapter in the Texas Finance Code, Chapter 159, to be administered by the Department of Savings Mortgage Lending to regulate the wraparound mortgage industry. Now, one thing that has happened subsequent to the publication of our Finance Commission materials is that some of you may have seen a little bit of media attention with respect to Nation Star Mortgage doing business as Mr. Cooper. And so I thought I would take just a second to verbally supplement the legal activity report for the department. Nation Star Mortgage, LLC, does business as Mr. Cooper, and as you may know, is headquartered in Coppell, Texas, and it is the largest non-bank loan servicer in the United States. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB, in conjunction with numerous state regulators, have been investigating the loan modification and residential loan servicing practices of NationStar over the last several years. The Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending, along with CFPB and numerous other state regulators, thereafter participated in an attempt to resolve these loan modification and servicing practices that were in question. As a result, on Monday of this week, December 7th, 2020, the CFPB announced that it had filed both a federal lawsuit in the District Court of the District of Columbia, as well as a proposed decree judgment in relation to NationStar and Mr. Cooper's activities. And this relates to not only violations of RESPA, but the Consumer Financial Protection Act of 2010 and other laws. And as part of the settlement signed by the parties, including the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending, and the judgment approved by the district judge on Tuesday, December 8th, 2020, NationStar, Mr. Cooper, doing business as Mr. Cooper's, to pay or provide millions of dollars in restitution to thousands of consumers across the nation, including Texas. In addition to to the consumer restitution, the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending, as part of the agreement was to receive monetary penalties. However, the department has negotiated to have the penalty amount to also be distributed to armed Texas consumers instead of having the penalty paid to the department. Members of the commission, that concludes the department's legal activity report. Pending any questions, will be followed by Associate General Counsel Ian Barrett.
Members, any questions for Mr. Garcia? Hearing none, we'll now move on to item number four. Mr. Berry.
Chairman Holt, can you hear me all right?
You might have to speak up a little bit.
Is that better?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Ian Berry, Associate General Counsel, Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Members, agenda item four begins at page 139 of your packet. It involves the adoption of amendments to existing rules contained in 7 TAC Chapter 80 arising from rule review. During the Finance Commission meeting in August, the members approved publication of proposed amendments in Chapter 80. And members, I'll note here that the discussion of this agenda item also applies and is relevant to agenda item 5. And I will be referring back to this discussion when we take up agenda item 5. The rule changes concerning agenda item 4 were published in the Texas Register on September 25th, 2020. No comments were received during the official comment period. Now, ordinarily, when no such comments are received, the department recommends adoption of the amendments as proposed and places the item on the consent agenda. However, after the comment period had closed, the department did hear from a few folks wondering how we were intending to implement certain rule changes concerning the statutory definition for residential mortgage loan originator, and specifically wondering whether additional individuals would need to hold a residential mortgage loan originator license once the rules were adopted. It was certainly not our intent with these rules to make changes to expand the number of folks who need to carry a residential mortgage loan originator license. The intent was to add clarification to the statutory definition. And so in order to preserve that clarity, the department determined that it should eliminate the language that these late commenters referenced. And with this change, the commenters withdrew any reservations they had about the rule. And so as a result, members, the department recommends changes on adoption, again, to remove subparagraph D of the definition for what it means to, quote, offers or negotiates the terms of a residential mortgage loan, close quote, a phrase which is used and included in the statutory definition for residential mortgage loan originator. Members, that concludes my presentation. And so unless you have any questions, the department recommends that the Finance Commission approve adoption of the amendments to Chapter 80, including with the changes recommended by the department to the proposed text previously published in the Texas Register.
Thank you, sir. Members, are there any questions for Mr. Berry? Hearing none, if there's anyone wishing to address the Commission for Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending Rule Item Number 4, please use the raise your hand feature on your screen at this time. Seeing none, do I hear a motion to approve the adoption of amendments to 7 TAC Section 80.1, 80.2, 80.200, 80.202 through 206, 80.300, and 80.301 concerning the Texas Residential Mortgage Loan Companies resulting from rule review?
This is Larry Long. I make a motion.
Thank you, sir. Do I have a second?
This is Molly Curl. I'll second.
Thank you, Molly.
I'll second. This is Molly.
Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. We'll now move on to item number 5. Is this still you, Mr. Berry?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this item begins, this is agenda item 5, and begins at page 148 of your packet concerning adoption of amendments in 7 TAC Chapter 81. Resulting from rule review. As I mentioned just a moment ago, the discussion for agenda item 4 is relevant to this agenda item. The rules contained in 7TAC Chapter 81 that apply to mortgage loan originators and mortgage bankers largely mirror those in Chapter 80, which we just discussed. So the department essentially recommends the same rule changes on adoption with respect to agenda item 4 and the rule in 7TAC Chapter 80 to eliminate the subsection D for the definition for, quote, offers or negotiates the terms of residential mortgage loan, close quote, which again relates to the statutory definition for residential mortgage loan originator. It's basically the same change just in Chapter 81. And given the previous discussion, unless you have any questions, at this time the department recommends that the Finance Commission approve adoption of the amendments to 7TAC Chapter 81, including with the changes recommended by the department to the proposed text previously published in the Texas Register.
Members, are there any questions for Mr. Berry? If there's anyone wishing to address the Commission for Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending Rule item number 5, please use the raise your hand feature on your screen. No one being there, so do I hear a motion to approve the adoption of amendments to 7TAC section 81.1, 80 through 81.3, 81.200, 81.202, 81 through 81.206, 81.300, and 81.301 concerning mortgage bankers and residential mortgage loan originators resulting from rule review. I need a motion, commissioners.
Will Lucas, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Lucas.
Carl Warren, second.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. Members, do we have any discussion on this item? If not, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Members, we're now going to move on to item number 6. Mr. Berry, is this still you?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, agenda item 6 begins at page 156 of your materials, and the previous two items were adoption, now a proposal. Agenda item 6 involves a proposal for amendments, new rules, and rule repeals in 7TAC Chapter 75, which affects the thrift industry. Members, I'll give you some procedural background for the rule changes. And I'll note here that this discussion about handling the rule changes and pre-comment prior to bringing this proposal largely applies also to agenda item 7, which we'll hopefully get to here in a moment. Members, the rule changes proposed in this rulemaking action arise from the periodic review of the department's rules in 7TAC Chapter 75, conducted pursuant to 2001.039 of the government code, aka rule review. Members are certainly familiar with that process. The rules. So on October the 30th, the department published a pre-comment notice with initial drafts of the rule changes being considered in Chapter 75. On November the 3rd, the department held a stakeholder webinar on the rule changes being considered. No written pre-comments were received, but the department did hear from a few stakeholders who informally indicated they were in favor of the rules, and in particular, the changes to Section 75.31 concerning activities not requiring an approved office, including a suggested minor change, again made informally, which is actually incorporated into the rule changes in your materials. The rules were all, of course, also forwarded to the governor's office for review, and the governor's office does not have any pending questions or concerns regarding the rule changes. Members, the preamble in your packet contains an explanation of the rules and describes the type of rule changes being proposed. So unless you have any questions, the department recommends that the Finance Commission approve publication of the amendments, new rules, and rule repeal in 7TAC Chapter 75 in the Texas Register.
Thank you, Mr. Berry. Any questions, commissioners? If there's anyone wishing to address the Commission for Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending Rule item number 6, please use the raise your hand feature on your screen at this time. Seeing no one, commissioners, do I hear a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of amendments, new rules, and repeals in 7TAC Part 4, Chapter 75 concerning applications resulting from rule review?
Laura Warren, so moved.
Thank you, Mr.
Robert Armstrong, second.
Was that you, Dr. Armstrong? Second? Is that who it was? Who seconded that, please?
Carl Warner second. Hello?
Okay, let me just repeat for the record. We have Laura Warren that made the motion and Dr. Armstrong seconded. Is that correct? Thank you very much. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. Members, we will now move on to item number 7. Mr. Berry, is this still you?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Members, agenda item 7 begins at page 193 of your packet. And as I mentioned a moment ago, this is part of the same process of rule review. And so the discussion in agenda item 7 about the webinar and the pre-comment notice also applies here. No comments were received in connection with the rules in chapter 76. These rules were forwarded to the governor's office. They have no outstanding questions or concerns. And again, the preamble in the packet contains an explanation of the rules and describes the types of rule changes being proposed. Unless you have any questions, the department recommends that the Finance Commission approve publication of the amendments, new rules, and rule repeals in 7 TAC Chapter 75 in the Texas Register. And I think I just mentioned new rules, Mr. Chair, that in this agenda item. It's actually just amendments and rule repeals. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Ms. Berry. Members, do we have any questions for the council? If there's anyone wishing to address the Commission for Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending Rule Item Number 7, please use the raise your hand feature on your screen at this time. Seeing no one, members, do I have a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of amendments and repeals in 7 TAC Part 4, Chapter 76 concerning miscellaneous and resulting from rule review.
Will Lucas, so moved.
Thank you. Do I have
Laura
a second? Thank you, Laura. Appreciate it. Members, do we have any discussion? If not, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. Members, we'll now move on to item number 8. Mr. Berry, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, agenda item 7 begins at page 193 of your materials. I'd like to apologize to the industry out there that we did not hold a webinar on this particular rule change because it's literally one word, and it has to do with section 77.10. And actually, excuse me, it's... Agenda item 8. I apologize. It begins at page 215 of your material. And again, this is literally a one-word change. You add one word to section 77.10 concerning non-real estate commercial loans, and it also results from rule review. And so it's pretty clear already that the section applies to non-real estate commercial loans, but we thought we could add a bit more clarity by just putting that the word commercial into the actual text of the rule. And so we're not aware of any confusion under the existing rule, but again, you know, adding a little clarification always helps, so we thought we'd plug that word in. This proposal was also forwarded to the governor's office. They have no outstanding questions or concerns. So unless you have any questions, the department recommends the Finance Commission approved publication of the amendment in 7 TAC, section 77.10 in the Texas Registry.
Thank you, Mr. Berry. Members, do we have any questions for the council? If there's anyone wishing to address the Commission for the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending Rule Item Number 8, please use the raise your hand feature on your screen at this time. Seeing none, Members, do I hear a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of amendments to 7TAC 77.1 concerning non-real estate commercial loans resulting from rural review?
Vince Puentes, so move.
Thank you, sir. Second. I'm sorry, I can't hear the second.
Aaron McCormick, second.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Appreciate it. Members, do we have any discussion on this matter? If not, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Subject to any questions anyone has, that concludes FML's report.
Members, any questions? Thank you, Commissioner Jones.
Executive session.
Members, we're now going to be going into the executive session. Before closing the meeting, I need to state what time it is, which is 11:15 on December 11th. At this time, the commission will go into a closed session pursuant to Government Code Sections 551.071 and 551.072. Everybody signed off. Okay. Staff attending the executive session are Commissioner Cooper, Commissioners Pettyjohn, and Commissioner Jones. Also attending are Wendy Rodriguez, Catherine Ryer with the Texas Department of Banking, Antonio Antoff with the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Commissioners, please confirm this is correct.
Yes.
Yes, for FML.
That's correct.
The OCCC. The three agency commissioners and their staff will go first, followed by the Texas Department of Banking. At this time, the commission will go on to a secure line and the audience may remain on the webinar. Members, please at this time disconnect from the webinar. The commission will return to the webinar upon conclusion of the executive session. We are anticipating the session to last about 30 minutes. Back everyone, the time is 11:44 a.m. on December 11th and the commission is now back in open session. No action was taken during the closed session. At this time, I just want to wish everybody a happy holiday season. Please be safe and take good care of your families and the loved ones that you'll be spending the holidays with. There being no further business to discuss, the meeting of the Finance Commission is now adjourned. The time is 11:45 a.m. Thank you, everyone.
Happy holidays.